Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? That's the question we've been asking now for a year. This is our 52nd episode, so
woohoo!
If it's a weekly, that makes it a year.
Congratulations.
Yeah, happy first birthday. Today, I have with me again, Chris, who I talked to, the week before last. You are also one of the founding hosts, like the original cast of Idle Red Hands.
Yes.
So not only are you one of the original casts, you worked heavily in the production of the podcast from the beginning.
When we first started out, I did most of it, actually. I did the intro recording, I did the editing, the website. Lyle and Chris, other Chris, came up with most of the scripts and topics and stuff. Yeah, Wayne at the time. So I was mostly the tech guy from the beginning.
Oh, nice. So let's just talk a little bit about the origins. I think it's been going on long enough, and I think anybody that's new to it will kind of get them up to speed. So when did you originally come to Japan?
I came to Japan about 15 or 16 years ago. 2003 was when I first landed here.
And what was your kind of gaming situation? Did you go to JIG meetings or had you met anybody?
No, hardly anything, actually. I had pretty much gotten out of the gaming thing. Not by choice, just there weren't many gamers around. I was mostly just with other English teachers drinking myself silly every night, as kind of is the 20-age culture around here among the English teachers. It wasn't actually until I met Chris and Lyle that we all started gaming up again. And yeah, I haven't been able to stop since. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so Chris and Lyle were co-workers, right? So they worked for the same company.
Correct, yes. We all worked for that English company, Nova.
You were at Nova too, so that's how you guys met?
Yes, yes. I was a teacher and they were working at the head office area, but I moved up there for like some kind of trial period for a temporary thing. Yeah, we all met then. There's actually a fourth as well, Duncan, who I don't think he ever joined the podcast, though he often talked about it. But the first iteration was actually, it was called 11th Floor Games, because we were on the 11th floor of the building, and we were all doing board games together, designing our own board games and playing around with him and such.
Cool.
Yeah, long before the podcast.
So originally, when you guys were working together, was your ambition to publish games, or at least like self-publish game ideas?
Absolutely, yeah. That was what we were all aiming for at the time.
Oh, that's cool. So when did it become Idle Red Hands?
I don't know the actual date, but it has to be going on 10 years ago now, I think.
Mm, right. According to the FTP, February 2011 was the first episode. So yeah, next year,
wow,
February will be the 10th anniversary.
Wow, that's crazy. Incredible. You'd think we have more followers by now.
Right. Well, there's been some setbacks. Things like Apple Podcasts, Apple iTunes becoming Apple Podcasts,
yeah,
didn't help that.
True, true.
When did you get determined to record and start doing originally it was weekly, right? Weekly podcast.
Yes. Well, for a while before the podcast, we had been doing a weekly game session. I was running a D&D campaign. I think it was like a 2-year long game as well. It's a pretty good campaign. But it featured a group of enemies that were trying to infiltrate a kingdom and destroy it. And they were called the Red Hand. They're all marked by like a blood red hand kind of thing. Imagine the Hand of Sauron, but red instead.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that kind of became the nickname of the campaign. Pain, even though it wasn't the official name for it. And when it came time to choose a name for a podcast, that's what we settled with.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So the Idle Red Hands came from your original D&D campaign. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think some of the other suggestions were, what was it? We wanted to do something about Japan. So I think six-sided samurai was one of the other ones, but we figured, no, we use 20-sided more often than that. So.
Right. Nice. Well, I think Idle Red Hands is nice and memorable. So that's why I first started listening to you guys, because I liked that name. I thought that was very compelling because it wasn't, you know, there wasn't alliteration and there wasn't like, you know, some kind of gimmick. You hear a lot of podcasts and YouTube channels that are trying to be too cute and clever.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I thought the name was nice and cryptic. So that works.
Even we don't know what it means.
Yeah, so we'll have to figure something out for the 10th anniversary.
Absolutely.
Try to do something special. And also for the weekly, hopefully in this next year, once our health emergency is over, I'd like to work on things like a video component to the weekly and, you know, do things to kind of evolve it a bit. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. I think that's some fun background on the origins of this original podcast.
Yeah.
So so what have you been doing gaming-wise the last couple of weeks?
Geez, not much really, to be honest. I just downloaded all three of the Mass Effect series. So I've been playing online, computer RPGs pretty much nonstop since the beginning of May.
Oh, nice.
Well, it's one of those things, you know, here in Japan, we have the Golden Week. So the first week-ish of May is about a week off. And then plus the quarantine and business schedule going all wacky for it, I basically got a half a month off of work. Just downloaded that and been playing it nonstop. So
this is your first time to play Mass Effect?
It is, yeah. I've been wanting to play it for ages, but I thought there wasn't a PC version until I found it on Origins and then, yay.
Did you play Dragon Age or any any other RPGs by the same guys?
No, I haven't. Dragon Age is one that was highly recommended, but I never actually looked into it.
You're telling me this is the first computer RPG you've played with a romance option?
No, not by any means.
Okay. Oh, good. Oh, sorry, you live in Japan. Yeah, right. Of course it's not. Is your weekly Star Wars Powered by the Apocalypse still going?
Yes, we are doing that. We haven't done it for about 2 weeks now because we're actually all really into to Warhammer Kill Team. So that's been eating up that time. It's weird. Without our weekly game session too, it's I haven't been doing as much gaming as I would like to. So I need to get into more.
Yeah. I'm surprised the RPG group on JIG on the Japan Gamers Guild is pretty active. Nice. And so I got involved in the Fantasy Flight. I guess it's kind of the Genesis mm-hmm. system, but it's that Fantasy Flight Star Wars RPG. So I'm doing that. Alan brought me into that campaign. So yeah.
Nice. Online as well?
Yeah. So that's just through Discord. Yeah. It's voice only. We just use a whiteboard. Yeah. So I haven't met in person. So the only person I actually know in the campaign is Alan.
Oh, cool.
The cheerleader and motivator.
And how's that going for you, gaming over Discord?
It's okay. Yeah. It's a little jarring. Like, it just reminds me too much of sitting. When I first came to Japan, I was still working for the US and sitting in horrible Skype meetings with everybody's, you know, volume and sound all different and things cutting out. Mm-hmm. And we had a session last night and did have some dropout, like people were having internet trouble. And so people like the GM would go into a long description of something. And it's like, well, we got about a third of that. So I hope we just heard the essential stuff. That's a little unpredictable. And mm-hmm. having people, like some people have obviously really nice mic setups. And then some people are just using, you know, either their phone or a mic on a laptop or something. So you get a really, you know, big variety of quality. And that's the only thing that is not too pleasant about it. I'm really surprised though. There's a lot of nice, I think I talked about this, dice rolling bots and everything are really nice. They make online play very easy and that's all free. You know, so they have any kind of, you know, dice you need to roll for any system. Somebody's built a bot for it and you can do any kind of configuration and you can even keep track of initiative and all kinds of things right there. So, you know, there's no cheating. People aren't rolling in front of them and, you know, you don't have to point a webcam at what they rolled or anything. So yeah, it's nice. That's a nice evolution. And it seems like if you're willing to just do audio only and just share some images, that's going to put a real crimp into some of the virtual tabletops because, you know, they're a lot more involved and everything and maybe a lot more recordable. Like that's a more interesting thing to watch probably on YouTube than just to hear a voice discussion of various sound qualities. A
couple pictures popping up, yeah.
Right.
I've always wanted to try out one of those really complicated systems in an online game, something like BattleTech or Shadowrun or something like that that uses horrible dice mechanics, because when it's online, the computer can do everything for you and you can stick without just the imaginative stuff.
Right.
But no, I'm actually doing Apocalypse World.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. To get all the, you know, the bookkeeping and all the quick math out of the way and just, let the game master do story and players do role play. That sounds good.
I always figured that one game, Eclipse Phase, have you played that before?
No, I read a little bit of the core book. Both Chris and Lyle have talked about it, but no, I've never played it.
Chris ran a short campaign for us way, way back in the day. I actually really love the premise of that system. It's, I don't know if you've mentioned it on the weekly before, but it's based on transhumanism. So you can sleeve in and out of different bodies. So your physical stats are always changing. And the system comes with like 100 different skills that have to be recalculated according to your stats, which change when you sleeve bodies. And it's a really, really cool setup and a really cool system, but it is massively complicated. It's impossible to play without spreadsheets, I think.
Oh, wow.
It's always a game that I thought would really, really benefit from being played online. I'm kind of nipping at the bit to try that.
Oh, yeah.
In these times, but
that sounds fun. Yeah. So I think that came up when we were talking about Altered Carbon. So they're doing a based on the TV, you know, based on the book, based on the TV series, they're doing an RPG. Chris said that Eclipse Phase did it so much better that he doesn't see why there's a need for an Altered Carbon role-playing game.
It's because Eclipse Phase never got as popular as that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true.
Like, it is seriously a really cool system, and the setting is way out there, and I absolutely love it. If I think it's for free as well. You can download it. I think the book itself is torrentable because it's a very futuristic system.
Oh, cool.
So,
Wow, that's cool.
I highly recommend it to anyone who's looking for something new and very different.
And there's a second edition out now, right? I think I saw that on online.
Yes, yeah. That's right. I heard about that. And, you know, I still haven't gone and looked that up. So I thank you for reminding me. I have to do that.
Yeah. Speaking of role play on the computer, there was just an announcement that the studio Frontier, the studio that did Elite Dangerous, is going to do a real-time strategy version of Warhammer Age of Sigmar.
Ooh.
So that's kind of the reboot of their fantasy, of Warhammer Fantasy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it seems like it's going to be a Dawn of War kind of setting. And I think for Age of Sigmar, there's only been mobile games. I don't think that setting has actually come to the PC yet. So this will be the first, you know, kind of fully fleshed out. And if it's like, you know, if it's like a Dawn of War game for 40K, that could be pretty fun. A fantasy RTS could be.
Very, very. Have you played Age of Sigmar before?
I painted a lot of models and read a lot of rules, but no, I never found anybody. Everybody that I tried to get into it once that switch happened kind of chickened out because I had a Skaven army that I could have adapted. And then I bought the starter set. So I had the Stormcast Eternals and just everybody that was like close to getting into it. They're like, so they stuck to like skirmish games. So I think a few of the Malifaux players were thinking about Age of Sigmar, but I never got anybody into it. And I don't know, the lore for kind of the first edition of the game was a little wacky. I think it's gotten better. Second edition is kind of, things make a little bit more sense. And so I think the PC games will be a little bit more fun and a little bit more understandable. There's a richer world now. Before it was just like, okay, fantasy old world blew up and then it was reassembled into these little like pocket universes or these little bubbles of these realms is what they called them. It seemed like a real weird way to kind of reassemble things and keep them separate. And so the lore was kind of weird, but it's gotten better. So that leads me to also released over this break, not a print version, but a digital version. There is now also an Age of Sigmar tabletop RPG. So Cubicle 7, the company that has all of the Warhammer licenses, released the core book for it. So it's Age of Sigmar Soulbound. It's a little bit different. So if you like, they also do old world Warhammer fantasy. So if you like that setting, this is not that. It really feels, it feels really, really different. And they stick to a single realm in the game. I think it's the Realm of Fire. Which is kind of where the first conflict started, where like the Realm Gate Wars started in the original version. And you're kind of playing, it's very interesting because it has a stronger tie to the miniatures than I think any other role-playing game has ever had, because the characters you can play, like the race and kind of archetype of the characters you play, are just based on what kind of characters are available. So it's basically, things seem to be coupled together. Like, you know, you are a Stormcast knight, you know, there's nothing, you can't be a dwarven knight, you know, there's like things that are just kind of, they're kind of matched up because they want to give you the flavor and keep you kind of aligned with things. So it's an interesting, you're basically like, you know, you want to find a miniature that you like and then play that miniature. So it's different in that way. You don't have it doesn't have the feeling of starting from Ratcatcher or anything. You're very specific, a very specific character with very specific abilities. And it's very kind of flavorful and rich because they did flesh out a lot of these worlds, like the Dryad race. That you can play has like, they can't wear armor, but they have built-in medium armor just because they're constantly growing bark. And so there's interesting abilities that come with the type of character that you're playing. But if you don't know that world, it seems like a lot to get into right away.
Warhammer lore, either fantasy or 40K is a beast.
And this is still like, you know, early, you know, in this world's lore, and it's still pretty brutal. The one thing that was interesting that they did show is there are terrain rules and things. So I think they're encouraging you to use the miniatures, which makes sense because then they'll sell more plastic. They have terrain rules and things, so they want you to be actually putting miniatures on a table when you're playing the game. And I think that'll be pretty immersive because they've got such gorgeous miniatures for that
world. For sure, yeah. Might be able to branch out into selling their own terrain and things like that as well.
I think so. I think they'll start to, you know, they'll go with what's existing and then, start to maybe make things that go along with that. But yeah, so they already announced, so Cubicle 7 released the core book just last month, I believe, and it's like sitting right at the top of the drive-through RPG list, so I think people are pretty excited about it. And now that,
good for them.
And that's digital only, so they're selling well digitally, and people are probably waiting to actually be able to order a physical copy. And I think that's going to start in July, but they've already released news that they're going to do a starter set and a GM screen, and then also free adventures. That's the other nice thing that Cubicle 7 does to support their systems, like with Warhammer Fantasy. They'll just release a lot of free adventures online that can be one shots or kind of hook into your campaign. So there's a lot of material and a lot of support.
That's really cool. As a longtime role player, my initial knee-jerk reaction is to kind of bristle against that. Like, wait, I can't play a dwarven knight? Well, why can't I mix it up? Anyway, however, to have a miniature that goes along and say, like, this is my character, that I can see a real appeal to that. And a lot of people really love the tabletop aspect of D&D and other games like that. So yeah, I could see a lot of fun out of that.
Yeah, I think coming from the miniatures game too, if there's a force or an army that you've collected and to be able to play like a named character from that army and like, you know, take one of your miniatures out of that. Yeah, that might be, it connect you to it. I think it'll connect you to that role play a lot more.
Yeah, sounds like a blast.
And as we discussed the last time we talked, we kind of foreshadowed this. Officially, I got the email this morning, the official announcement, Gen Con 2020 is canceled.
Shocked. I am shocked and surprised.
I'm really, I'm really worried that, you know, just like people are realizing, hey, maybe I don't have to, you know, go into work every day. This telecommuting thing is kind of cool. Like, mm-hmm. what if people say, hey, yeah, let's just do virtual conventions from now on, because I don't like to smell all of the people that are in my same hobby.
Uh-huh.
The announcement was, it is with heavy hearts that we must announce the cancellation of Gen Con. They're giving you three options if you did already buy a badge. So they'll refund you minus a $10 handling fee, roll your badge over to next year, if there is a next year, and also just give you credit. They'll return it to you as a credit in their system so you can buy another badge or, you know, t-shirts or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice. They give you a little bit of flexibility. Then they also announced that they're going to do, during those same dates, so over those same 4 days, they're going mm-hmm. to do Gen Con online.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, virtual version of things and actually host games and things. So there's no details yet about exactly what's going to be available and what they're going to do, but they're going to do a virtual version of Gen Con. I'm curious to see what that is. And I hope they do okay. I'm just going to leave. I'm just going to let my badge roll, because they kind of pleaded a little bit. They said, you know, if you don't ask for a refund, you know, that keeps us going for another year because we do have bills to pay and, you know, mm-hmm. things like that. So I was inclined to just, yeah, we'll see what happens. And
nice. I wonder if them taking this long to make the announcement was to try and set up this virtual thing to see how if that was actually going to be feasible or not.
Right. That may have been, yeah, that they wanted to offer some kind of alternative, because just saying, I mean, because most of the conventions that canceled just said, nope, nothing, that's it. You know, there
right.
were a few, I think like Mantic, it wasn't even a convention. It was just their open day. Mantic's open day ended up being a virtual open day. And a lot of companies were trying to, you know, at least do like a series of live streams and, you know, kind of interviews and sessions and stuff to kind of keep you connected to their brands and things.
Mm-hmm.
I will be attending Gen Con online, at least.
Is it going to be an open attendance, or do you need to buy a badge for it? Because that actually sounds pretty cool. I think I might try and jump in on that.
Yeah, no, they didn't say anything about it costing anything. And they didn't, like, you know, connect the badge to, now your badge is, you know, makes you eligible for Gen Con online. So it should be, and especially if they're going to do it over Twitch or whatever, like some of the other companies are doing, it should be pretty much free and open. And because it is just a lot of press announcements and people demoing games and stuff. So
right.
it would be hard, especially with the remote nature of it. It would be hard to charge for it, but maybe there's some premium. You can ask a question if you have a ticket. The end of the email was a little sad. It said, nothing can replace being at Gen Con in person, but we hope you'll join us to play games and celebrate the things that bring us together.
Aww.
So, we're going to be apart over a whole year. I hope this doesn't damage, because there are so many conventions, comic book conventions and role play conventions, and mm-hmm. everything has been canceled. I mean, and I think it's going to, even stuff that's going to be happening later in the year, I think a lot of stuff is just gone for this year.
Yeah.
And so I hope that it comes back. Like, I hope these companies are managing things well, and they don't, like, you know, need that infusion of cash every year from these conventions to keep going. And who knows? I hope that, these things are all still around.
Well, I can't speak to like the company's financial stability in times not having this cash future, but I can't imagine that that conventions as a business would stop happening. I mean, right now, doing these large online groups is completely feasible, coronavirus notwithstanding. But if that was so important or such a draw, then conventions would have already died out, I reckon. So
yeah.
I'm sure we'll see more.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, if people, because they're becoming, especially the big ones, are becoming more and more unpleasant affairs, because a lot of them have outgrown their facilities, like especially San Diego Comic-Con. That,
yes.
I'm anticipating that is going to be the impetus for them to move it to the LA Convention Center, like where they have E3 and things,
mm-hmm.
because they've outgrown that tiny San Diego building. But, you know, San Diego benefits so much from that show
every
summer. The taxes and fees and everything, and all the occupancy taxes and everything that hotel rates must, you know, include. We'll see what happens. But I suspect, because it is such a Hollywood thing, if Hollywood people didn't have to drive those 3 hours to San Diego, I'm sure they would be much happier to attend the hall presentations and panel discussions.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what this does shake up as far as conventions. But I'm virtually going to Gen Con this year.
Well, then I might virtually be there with you.
Nice. So Idle-Red Hands will virtually attend Gen Con.
That would be sweet.
Yes. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, but if we can figure out, you know, at least something to do, running something online or doing something kind of, mm-hmm. you know, during that time as well, that might be fun to participate as much as possible, or at least do, you know, at least watch stuff together and do some live streaming and cheer and jeer at the things that we love and hate.
If it's a virtual thing, can we like live stream it and then call ourselves like live from Gen Con?
Yeah, we could. We could just stand in front of it. Yeah, we could project it behind us and stand in front of it. And say, yeah, right. Coming at you virtually live from virtual Gen Con. As far as Utter Red Hands, we're writing the script right now for the third part of the Mutant Chronicles. So the next lore part is coming.
Yes.
Part one and two are available now. And if you enjoyed those and if you want to see more and if you want to see more faster, please consider visiting patreon.com/idleredhands. We have a lore backing level for patrons that specifically want to see those videos. So let us know if you're enjoying those. We will keep at them.
And for that matter, if there's any additional systems or lores that you'd like to hear and you like the style that we're doing it in, please send those suggestions up the chain as well, because we're having a lot of fun making them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it would be great to expand into a lot of stuff. And also, another thing coming up is I got the okay from the studio that produces it to live stream the Doom Trooper virtual collectible card game.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. So in the Mutant Chronicles universe, so Doom Troopers are essentially the Space Marines of Mutant Chronicles. And there was a collectible card game that came out in the 90s that I think most people are more familiar with than the actual RPG or the miniatures game. Huh. Maybe I think that showed up in comic book stores and things, so it was a little bit more visible because people that are commenting on lore, they know so much of the lore from that.
I knew about the miniatures game, and it confused me when I finally learned about the role-playing game, but until this point, I'd never heard of the card game before.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a failure of marketing on their side. And I think what happened, you know, there was in America, like, you know, Heartbreaker was then bought by Target Games, which then, you know, failed, and that kind of stuff happened so fast that I think they kind of stumbled before things could really build. And speaking of Sweden, as far as Kickstarters, there was one thing that I wanted to mention this week. And this is a little funny because this is a game that I backed when it first came out, the English version of it first came out. So Trudvang, the Swedish RPG by Riot Games, is now on Kickstarter producing their setting, Trudvang, for 5e of the world's greatest role-playing game. So it's a little funny thing for them to do. And I think because the setting is very interesting and there's a lot of great art and a lot of like rich lore because it's all based on, you know, Norse and Celtic mythology. Mm-hmm. The funny thing about this coming to 5e is that Trudvang was one of the original settings created when Sweden made their version of Dungeons and Dragons. So Dungeons and Dragons.
I remember that. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is basically Swedish D&D now ported to D&D. So it's a little odd, but I think people had trouble with the system because the system that Trudvang uses is old and very mathy, and it's a bit of a relic and it hasn't evolved. And if you like that world but are really used to modern role-playing, the very newest kind of ideas of role-playing and only play 5e, I think this gives you a chance to experience that setting. But it's really funny. So both Trudvang and Kronopia were settings for Dungeons and Dragons that were developed in Sweden. Kronopia, I don't think, ever became a setting translated into English. I think it only existed in Swedish, but it became the setting for then the miniatures game. Because I love the setting. Kronopia is a really interesting dark fantasy setting. Mm-hmm. To find out that it was like originally produced for Dungeons and Dragons was very fun to see. So now available to back there, like two volumes of their adaptation for Trudvang for 5e. And it's going to include all that amazing art, all the Paul Bonner and all the original kind of classic beautiful stuff that was done, not only for the original version, but updated. So take a look at that if you've ever been curious about that world or looked at that rule system and said, it's too Swedish for me. This would be the way to to kind of enjoy that, because it's kind of like, you know, pre-Tolkien, you know, fantasy. You know, if you're complaining about, oh, this is all, you know, this is fantasy before a kind of, you know, filtered through a British academic and then through Gary Gygax. But that was very curious for me because they've already done an expanded setting. Actually, I think they've done two for English Trudvang. It seems to be doing okay on Kickstarter, but I don't think they've kind of penetrated the newer audiences. I think people are buying it because it's the first time it's available in English. And then they love the books. They like the setting. And then the system is like, okay.
Yeah, you said old school. Like it's old foreign school. Archaic is the word I would choose for it. Right. Old but I love the whole concept, you know, that just Galapagos of gaming that happened over there. It's so cool.
Yeah, it is. It's really interesting. And I listened to a Swedish YouTuber go through, and that's why I got so convoluted maybe in my description of it, because he like tried to explain exactly how this works. And it's so funny, the things that are connected. Like basically Sweden started reacting to what TSR was doing in America and releasing their versions of things. So Mutant basically is Gamma World. When TSR released Gamma World, they're like, okay, we need post-apocalypse. And then they did Mutant. I didn't have much information on it, but they're going to do a new edition of Twilight 2000 as well.
Twilight 2000, what was that?
It's the more realistic kind of military-based post-apocalypse. So they do really, like it's got survival mechanics and stuff that are just brutal. You know, like you're tracking every bullet and every deciliter of water or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah, it's you know, basically World War III. So alternative history Cold War takes place in the remains of Poland after the Third World War, after an alternate history Cold War between the US and the USSR. Hmm.
Sounds bleak.
Yeah, the system is pretty rough and pretty bleak. But people refer to it, I guess, because it had interesting survival mechanics. Like when we were talking about, because of like the survival mechanics in Forbidden Lands, people were saying, oh, that, you know, that reminds me of Twilight 2000. And they did that really well in Twilight 2000, kind of crawling a map and like running out of water, running out of gas kind of stuff. But if there's more information, I'll do a more expanded.
Well, I'd be really interested in hearing that, because I was really intrigued by the first survival mechanics in Forbidden Lands. So I'd be really interested in seeing that. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. So as soon as there's more information about it, because it's Twilight 2000's had a weird kind of history. So it had a second edition in 1990, and then like a 2.2 update in the mid 90s, and then nothing until 2008, where they did a third edition, but they called it Twilight 2013. So I don't know what they I don't know how they were updating it. And then the studio that created Twilight 2013 closed in 2010, so they never got to that point. And so it's just been sitting dormant. But people, you know, have a lot of fondness for that, the kind of, you know, roughness and bleakness of that system. So
I'm surprised. I've never heard of that before. And so, yeah, I'm quite intrigued. Yes, I would love to hear more from you.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining me for this 1 year anniversary episode of It Already.
Yeah. Happy anniversary.
Yes. All right. We have a cake with one candle in it sitting here between us.
And because we're quarantined, you're going to eat it all by yourself.
This happens every week. So if you'd want to subscribe to the podcast, you can visit the website, utterredhands.com, or find it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all those places, even Spotify, even though we don't have an exclusive deal like Joe Rogan.
Yeah, you know, we'll get there. We'll get there.
So you can also follow us on Twitter at @UtterRedHands. And like I mentioned earlier, if you want to support the podcast, hear more of this, and hear about the games and things that you're interested in, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/UtterRedHands. So thank you, Chris, again for joining me.
My pleasure. Look forward to next time.
And that's all. So we will be back next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
the sounds of a call.